Welcome to Movie Moments, discussing the greatest movies of all time. Plus, all the newest films in theaters and streaming. Like us, rate us, share us. Here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
All right, we're back for another edition of Movie Moments. I'm Mike Rags. With me, as always, is my good buddy Chuck Curry, here to talk about the greatest movies of all time and the new stuff that's streaming or in theaters this weekend. And, of course, you can follow us wherever you listen to podcasts, on Spotify, Apple Plus, or wherever. Just make sure you subscribe so you get the latest edition of the show. We're going to do a fall movie preview 2023. We haven't done a movie preview in... well, it's been a long time. We're going to take a look at the movies from September to Thanksgiving weekend. And let's bring them in. As always, it's our good buddy, Chuck Curry. Chuck, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good, Mike. Actually, right as we speak, I'm sleeping outside in a sleeping bag outside my multiplex waiting to get into Expendables 4.
Unbelievable.
So I slept here all night with high anticipation. And I'm just wondering, where are the lines?
Well, it's funny. Let's talk about the box office real quick, because
sure.
Haunting in Venice did make $19 million and opened up number one last week. I don't even know what to make of that. But Expendables 4, I can't imagine it projecting anywhere higher than what Venice made.
But actually, it was tracking at the lowest of the franchise history, which was they initially predicted like 15 to 17, but based off the Thursday preview screenings, which did about 750,000, the expectation has been now lowered to around $8 to $10 million opening weekend. Stallone, I didn't see the film as of yet. As I said, I'm waiting breathlessly to get in. But Stallone, from what I read, only has like 12 minutes of screen time. It's mostly a Jason Statham movie. They cut the budget. Megan Fox is a female lead in the movie. The question is, when you spoke about this before, when we did the show, why would they greenlight the project if they're going to cut the budget? They're not going to have as many stars, if you want to call it that, around the edges and just basically doing it as a Jason Statham vehicle. What is the point? I guess the movie could be sold globally to some extent, but domestically, this movie was never going to do well.
A complete waste of time, if you ask me. Why not just sell this crap to Saban and let them release it straight to streaming if you're not going to have – I mean, even if Stallone's in it, I mean, I don't see one name in there that's going to draw me to the movie theater.
No, in retrospect, I was reading one review. I think it was from Joe Blow, which is a popular movie site. And they said, you know, if you look at it like a canon movie, you might have some enjoyment of it. But the reality in this culture, in this new studio system on steroids, I don't think the canon system works. You know, no. You're not going to make Charles Bronson, low-budget Charles Bronson type movies and get people into a theater. I mean, if you look at The Equalizer 3, and that stars one of the biggest, you know, Hollywood stars of all time, the amazing Denzel Washington, that movie had a good opening. It's going to be profitable, but they kept the budget contained at around $75 million, which is a good number for a studio film with a big name star with a high concept idea that in a third installment that will attract people into movie theaters. I just think, whatever they spent on Expendables 4, it was never going to be successful.
No, and it's also interesting this week, released straight to Netflix, the demise of Robert Rodriguez continues. He tries to relaunch Spy Kids, it with Spy Kids Armageddon. Reboot. The gal from In the Heights, I believe, is in it, and I want to say Zach Levy's in it too. It's just enough is enough. Here's a guy that was compared to Quentin Tarantino back in the day, Chuck, and now he's rebooting franchises that kind of died out with his. How many Spy Kids did he make in the first place? I don't know. Maybe for a Netflix market, something will happen, but it's a little surprising because he released that crap with Ben Affleck earlier this year too, which barely got a theatrical release. I'm just confused at what happened to Robert Rodriguez.
Listen, I mean, the industry's industry's unforgiving. You know, when you have a couple hits, they love you. When you have a couple clunkers, they forget about you. Wolfgang Peterson is a perfect example of that. You also argue Rennie Harlan is an example of that. Rennie Harlan is the guy who, Die Hard 2, Cliffhanger, Long Kiss Goodnight, and he makes Cutthroat Island, and his career goes up into oblivion. It is perplexing. Not an easy business, that's for sure.
I'm sure you got plenty of movie news for us to go through.
I got one story. I got a couple of things. You know, the writer's strike, writers and studio heads sitting down. They say there's very solid progress. Hopefully this is going to end soon. You know, I read just to bounce off that, I read an interesting story, which I did find really interesting. Leslie Jones, right, who was on SNL. She was one of the four female Ghostbusters in the female-oriented Ghostbusters reboot, which I liked. And we always, you always joke with me. I liked it. I know you weren't as kind, but I did find it very entertaining. And I would take that over the last movie, Ghostbusters Afterlife. I thought it was actually much better.
Oh, but you're crazy. Jones, you're crazy in that. You're crazy.
No, I'm
that's
not
in
crazy.
A whole other discussion. That is way off base.
Okay. But Leslie Jones said in an interview that Melissa McCarthy was paid $14 million for that Ghostbusters movie. She, Leslie Jones, was initially offered $65,000. And then settled for like $150,000. And they told her that, listen, you're going to get a plum role in a big studio franchise project, and it's going to make your career. Now, this has been done before. Sean William Scott, who is in, is that the guy from America Pie?
Stifler.
Stifler. Yeah. He was paid peanuts. Like, I think he said he was paid $7,000. To do American Pie, but they told him if the movie hits, good things are ahead. And in his case, that was accurate because for the sequels and other movies, he made millions and millions of dollars, right?
Yep.
So my question to you is $150,000 offer settlement, ultimate offer that she got paid Leslie Jones for Ghostbusters versus $14 million Melissa McCarthy. Your thoughts on that?
There's no conversation. It's awful. That the discrepancy between the two.
I agree. That's a bit much.
Yeah. So
Now, if they said $750,000, then I could say, okay, that's more realistic. But $65,000.
I'm sure Kristen Wiig made a lot more than her too.
Yeah, she did. Sure, she certainly did.
That's an interesting story. I did see,
and it's interesting because they squander so much money on these studio movies. I mean, literally squander, but yet they have to hardball negotiate with one of the four major Ghostbusters in the movie to initially offer a $65,000 and then ultimately give her $150,000.
Yeah, that's
weird. It seems bizarre, actually.
Very bizarre. And the franchise ends, so she can't make more.
So the reality is she didn't really gain that much off that movie. Here's another one, the Taylor Swift concert film from the Eros tour. Now tracking, it opens October 13th, which we're going to touch base in our preview. But this movie could do $150 million opening weekend, Mike.
It scared Dune away, right? It scared Dune out of the year. I mean, that was one of the original.
It also bounced the Exorcist Believer had that release date, and then I kicked it a week before. They anything and everything that was on that weekend ran away.
Yeah, it's going to be huge, as huge as the concert is, and I have no problem with it whatsoever because she's a megastar. And we need more stars like her.
So listen, she's everything she touches turns to solid gold. I mean,
And if it helps the box office, God bless her. Keep making concert movies. If it's better than it getting released on Netflix, put it in theaters.
I agree
with
that.
Great idea. Yeah,
I agree.
I saw they're going to make a Sicario 3, which is somewhat interesting because the first two movies are really, really good movies.
Yes, I agree with that.
I think only Benicio del Toro is going to be back for this one. But if you never have gotten a chance to see the other two, Dennis Villeneuve is the director. The first one's fantastic. Second one is almost as good with Josh Brolin and Benicio del Toro. It's a really good flick. So I only bring it up only to remind people, if you haven't seen the other two, you have to see those two movies. They're really good flicks.
They are really, really good, intense, some great acting, some great direction in those movies for sure. Here's an interesting story. I was just reading Michael Caine, who has a new movie coming out called The Great Escapers. co-stars the late Glenda Jackson. Now, Michael Caine's now 90, says he's basically in semi-retirement. He has some issues with his walking abilities. I mean, but he did say, and I thought it was funny when the person interviewed him in a print interview, they asked him about love scenes in movies. And Michael Caine said, the guy said, what do you think of intimacy? Supervisors on set. And he said, in my day, there was no such thing, thank God. And he basically was stating how much the industry has changed. I guess he was relating to woke, but you know, Michael Caine, 90, if you reflect, this guy's been in movies, Mike, since 1946. He did a TV movie called Morning Departure. 77 years ago, he was uncredited. He was a kid. That is a long career, a great career. Yeah, he's made some clunkers, but those clunkers are very watchable. The Island, Beyond the Beside Adventure, The Swarm, Jaws of Revenge. I don't know if that's watchable, but he's actually good in it. But Michael Caine, you know, getting the Alfred role in the Chris Nolan Batman movies has really defined him, I think, to new generations. Great actor. Michael Caine.
I still love Cider House Rules. I thought he did that in his later years. I mean, you can go on and on. You could spend 2 hours on Michael Caine. There's no doubt about that. I'm sure you've got other things, including I know there's a big this day in movie history. A couple of them, actually.
You tell me. I got some TV stuff. Go ahead. Give me
the movie 1969,
stuff.
Two cowboys jumped off a cliff. And it was released. That was Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, Chuck, this weekend back in the day. And it really paired up two of the megastars of the time. They'd go on to make and even maybe some might argue a better flick with The Sting. Star power at that time, you'd have to put Paul Newman a couple of notches above Redford there, right? I mean, even though to me, when I was growing up, I was always drawn to more Robert Redford films than Paul Newman films.
Yeah, I tell you, I saw Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid in a re-release sometime in the 70s. And I remember sitting there and I highly enjoyed it, especially the end. I was sort of like blown away by that by that ending. I remember seeing the Sting in a movie theater. And also remember, because I became a big Paul Newman fan, obviously with The Towering Inferno, a movie that's very dear to our hearts. But I remember seeing a movie called The Drowning Pool with Paul
Great
Newman.
Flick.
In a movie theater, and I love that sequence when the pool fills up and he has to save himself in the third act. But I mean, you know, star power ruled the day back then. It was always star power over concept. Now, which we talked about so many times, it's really concept over star power now.
Yeah, and it put Ally McGraw on the map too, and a little song called "Teardrops Keep Falling on My Head." Chuck, remember that?
Yes, which is sort of
song.
Bizarre, and it almost doesn't fit. It almost doesn't fit, but it helps sell that film a lot.
No doubt about it. And another
now, speaking real quick, this just popped in my head. Speaking of star power, I just read an interview because David Goyer, who I think he was the writer on the Chris Nolan's Batman trilogy, stated in an interview his interpretation of Batman behind the scenes stuff that Warner Brothers asked Nolan to cast Leonardo DiCaprio as the Riddler in The Dark Knight Rises.
Wow.
And they came back to the studio and said, that's not how this works. We placed the villain that we think fits the storyline, and they wanted Bane to fit this storyline, basically the fragileness of Bruce Wayne at this stage in his life and the physicality of it all. So they wanted Bane, but the studio, you know, goes to show you, talk about studio interference. They think, you know, DiCaprio's, you know, one of the biggest names on the planet. Batman's a big franchise. Let's just get the big actor and shoehorn him into this movie. But and also they wanted Jake Gyllenhaal as Bruce Wayne Batman and not Christian Bale. Yeah,
that would have been probably just as good. I'm a big
that would have been
interesting.
He would have been a good. He would have been good. He would have been good because obviously we know based on Nightcrawler. We know he could delve into darker territory. He's a fantastic actor.
How about Prisoners? Very dark movie.
Prisoners.
He's pretty dark in it as well. He's done a lot of good stuff. Yeah. I mean, he's one of my favorite actors now, running around on film.
I have to wonder when James Gunn ultimately casts his new Batman in the rebooted DCEU. Are they going to consider Jake Gyllenhaal? I mean, what is he's in his upper 30s now, right? And he has, by the way, he has the remake of Roadhouse coming out. Is that this year, Mike?
I think it's spring next year. I think it's spring.
Okay.
I'll take a look. That's an interesting concept as well. Can I boycott talking any superhero movies for just one freaking weekend? I mean, it's just next year will be the 30th anniversary of the Shawshank Redemption at this time. 29 years ago.
Wow.
Chuck, Shawshank Redemption comes out. Look, I remember
Where'd you see it?
I don't remember, but I remember.
I do.
I mean, I'm like, Shawshank. I know the reference for Stephen King. Two actors that I like. A jail movie. Oh, we'll see what happens. And the rest is history, Chuck. This is one of the great movies of the 90s. And maybe the best jailbreak movies of all time. I just remember thinking after, I'm like, they finally made a prison movie where there's a bunch of likable characters in the prison, and there's hope, and it's not all, you know, doom and gloom, and grittiness. That's the one thing I took out of that movie. And it just is so inspirational, and very well directed by Frank Darabont. I mean, we can go on and on and on about it, but 29 years ago, do you remember your expectation level of the film?
No, I do remember getting in my car by myself, driving from my home, into Marshalls Creek, Pennsylvania, at the Foxmoor. I saw it by myself, and I had no expectation. And I remember watching it and being enveloped in the story and being totally captivated by the performances and the characters, the direction. It's just, you know, it's really interesting why certain movies that are character driven, Godfather 1, Godfather 2, Goodfellas, The Shawshank Redemption, you put on that list. There's multiple movies. Taxi Driver would be in that category, where you just get so involved in the story, and these movies become timeless. And there's really no dead spots in these movies. I mean, you could change your channel, put on Shawshank Redemption, and just completely get into it. There's no like, oh, let me skip forward to this scene. It's all good. Like every frame of the movie is good. It has a beginning. It has a middle. It has an end, and it's completely satisfying on every level.
And what an ending it was. I mean, let's face it.
Great ending.
One of the great all-time endings. And it's interesting.
So well shot, too. The overhead shot is so memorable.
And then it's interesting. We're talking about Robert Rodriguez and Rennie Harlan and stuff. I know he had some success helping produce and do some of The Walking Dead. But Frank Darabont, I mean, he did The Green Mile after this, critically praised, made a lot of money, and The Mist.
He did The Mist. I mean,
he did The Mist, right? So that might be the movie that polarized so many people. I mean, he dipped into the Stephen King thing again, but I remember you either love that movie or hate that movie.
Why would you hate it though? I love that
movie.
Well,
because it's bleak.
Why do you think you'd hate it?
Because it's bleak. I mean, it may be the biggest downer of an ending of all time in a movie theater.
Maybe. Right? Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
It's hard to walk away from that movie feeling good. Now, I don't mind it. It's kind of,
it has feel good moments, though.
It does. And that's what it was pretty powerful. But Stephen King's on record as saying he loved the ending. Maybe that was why he just said, you know what, I'll dip a little bit into TV. And he hasn't directed a movie since that was 2007. Not that he was making a lot of movies. Didn't he do that movie with Jim Carrey too, right? But the movie theater, The Majestic, right? He's just definitely one of those directors that fit into that category of what happened and why did he go away.
Yeah, I mean, he wrote and directed the entire first season of Walking Dead, which has a slightly different feel than the rest of the series. I mean, I'm on record as it's my favorite all time show. I mean, I love the work he put into it, but I also think the people after him did a great job also. I mean, there's a lot of that is entangled in court with the rights and profit sharing and so on and so forth. But there's no doubt Frank Darabont has made a mark on television feature films. And in the Shawshank Redemption, I think it's safe to say for me and you would be included in the top 50 movies of all time. It is a masterpiece of filmmaking.
I got a good,
and,
I got a good TV on this date. 46 years ago, The Love Boat debuted. Captain Steubing and the gang. The guest stars on the first episode, Meredith Baxter, Bonnie Franklin, Suzanne Summers is on that first boat, J.J. Jimmy Walker. So definitely a dip into the past there, Chuck. Saturday night. I mean, yeah, as a youngster,
was it Saturday night at 10 or 9? It was, I think
Saturday
it was 10,
night Saturday at night. 9, and then 9, Fantasy okay. Island was on at 10 right after.
I mean, look, think about this. Think about this. Saturday night now is dead in TV. Dead. Like, dead. Nobody would air. Nobody in their right mind would air a network show on a Saturday night and think it's going to do well in the ratings. And that did. Those shows bucked the trend. People actually stayed home and watched those shows in massive numbers. He has an interesting.
You know what's funny too? Just a side note on that too, Chuck, because Love Boat did kind of spawn a new genre in TV as well, which was regular characters welcoming guest stars every week. You had like Super Train and Lottery and Fantasy Island, even as fact. Just all these TV stars coming on a regular series week to week. You were just waiting to see. And that really originated with the Love Boat. Some might say Love American Style, but it was that type of show really started with the Love Boat. And it had a shelf life. It only went so long. But it's interesting. On repeat viewing, the Love Boat is very much comfort food, and it does take you back to your childhood. It's on Paramount Plus.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, that was complete comfort food company. It was those actors, those characters on that show were good company, and just people love those characters, and it just made them feel good. That's all that was about. I mean, it wasn't to win critics over. It was never going to win Emmys. It just on a certain level, it just connected with the American audience, no doubt. Here's an interesting one. September 19th, this week, right? 1977, an episode of Happy Days airs called Hollywood Part 3, which we see Fonzie in a leather jacket, water skiing, jumping over a shark. And then when that episode aired, people got in their head that any TV show that sort of went a little bit over the top would be called, you used a metaphor for jumping the shark. Now, that reference has been used to me in many ways ridiculously, like when people say, oh, the Sopranos jumped the shark. No, it didn't. It never did. But in this case, even though Happy Days was still in its prime, Mike.
And still got ratings after it.
Yeah. And listen, as long as Richie Cunningham, Ron Howard is on the show, that show is good. Yeah. That show is good, even if it was silly and ridiculous. And this was a ridiculous moment. And you could argue. You could argue that the greatest jump the shark moment in the history of television was one of the most successful in terms of restructuring a show that kept it strong. And that was Bobby Ewing in the shower scene in Dallas. Right. I mean, it was ridiculous to do it, but it was necessary to bring his character back and stabilize the greatness of that show, which came before it. Am I wrong or right?
No, no doubt about it. And I'm with you, though. I still watched Happy Days after that. And now Jump the Shark is beyond entertainment. I mean, people use that phrase about companies, you know, and you know, when they jump the shark.
Much.
It's very interesting. I agree with you, though. Happy Days was still a watchable show after that.
Yeah. Here's a movie I would say jumped the shark. When you watched M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening, right? And then Mark Wahlberg and those guys start running away from wind. That's jumping the shark.
I think that's when M. Night Shyamalan jumped the shark. That's what his career jumped the shark.
He jumped the shark. That is a guy who jumped the shark. When somebody doesn't realize it, doing something that is absurd, but everybody else does. That is the definitive of jumping the shark.
When the producers hired Richard Pryor, that jumped the shark for Superman, that series. I mean, there's a jump the shark in franchises as well, where they all go downhill. Yeah. But it's interesting that it did happen way back when in 77. You got anything else on your docket there?
Yeah, I do. Let's talk about this. September 20th, 1984, The Cosby Show premieres on NBC, becomes a pop culture phenomenon, a ratings juggernaut. Connects on a very real level with a lot of people in this country. And then in retrospect, I reflect, now it ran from 84 to 92, right? It makes Bill Cosby a TV god, right? I mean, that's a safe analogy. And then to reflect in retrospect, what happened to Bill Cosby in real life? I mean, because you can't. Yeah. I don't think this show is streamed, right? This show's not.
No,
streamed.
You can't find the show anywhere. Nope. Yeah, you can't.
Nobody's
going
to touch.
Anywhere.
Nobody's going to touch it, which is sad for the other actors on the show: Lisa Bonet, Malcolm Jamal Warner, Felicia Rashad. It's just one of the saddest things in you know, American pop culture history, the whole thing.
I would say his life more reflects his film career than his TV career. Let's just say that. And I really rather not spend too much time on Bill Cosby because he's a piece of garbage.
Yeah,
but I did watch the show. Must-see TV started with that show Thursday nights. I will grant it that.
Before,
Family Ties, all that stuff, Cheers. It was all part of that. And he started it. I'll give him credit for that, but nothing else.
Yeah. I don't disagree with one word you said. Here's a few more. September 18, 1964. The Addams Family premieres on ABC. Runs for two seasons. John Astin. Cassidy Jones, Jackie Coogan, Ted Cassidy is Lurch. That's a show that didn't have a long run, but it has a legacy. Very, very long legacy. A year later, September 18, 1965, I Dream of Jeannie premieres. And I'm going to tell me what was different about the premiere episode that was different in other episodes they filmed following it.
On Dream of Jeannie, was Larry Hagman not on it? I don't remember. He was,
but the pilot episode was in black and white.
Oh, okay, I got you.
I believe after the first few episodes, they started filming in color. That's another one of the shows that I discovered on WPIX Channel 11 mm-hmm. after school.
How did repeats?
I enjoyed the heck out of that show.
How did Hollywood drop the ball on that? And they never got around to making a movie version of that.
You know, somebody said that to me the other day when I talked about that. Of all the things.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they never did Gilligan's Island, the movie, or either.
No, that's true, too. About, yeah, like, yeah.
They did banter about, like, Brian Dennehy and Rick Moranis in the Gilligan's Island movie back in the day.
I remember none of this
stuff would work now because they did a Bewitched movie. If you had a Hollywood studio pitch an I Dream of Jeannie movie now, I don't think it would work.
Probably not. Well, though Barbie worked, and there's some similarities there. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, if you tweak it in a certain direction.
Right. Look, nobody thought the Brady Bunch movies were going to work, and they both worked big time. I mean, if you spin a franchise on its head.
Because they were smart. Well,
the bottom line is get a good writer, get a good concept, and you can make any movie good, right? It really comes down to that. It doesn't matter what you do with and look what they did with Addams Family, made it popular again with Wednesday. They put a little spin on it, and it's actually a very enjoyable show, a series on Netflix. So it really comes down to just getting a good concept and putting together a good script. Chuck, I'd like to start. You got one more? I'll go for it.
This week in TV history, 1989, Doogie Howser, M.D. with Neil Patrick Harris airs on ABC, became a hit. Mm-hmm. He was very good. I was a fan of this show. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, you could stream it on Disney Plus in its entirety
as
well.
I think his name was Max Casella. His best buddy was really good.
Yeah, Vinny was good. It was a very enjoyable show.
Sopranos.
Yep. Didn't last very long. Wasn't on as many series as if you look back. I think it was only three or four seasons that it was on. But
yeah, crashed and burned at the end.
But I liked it. Yeah, the kids grew up and it was kind of the charm went away. But I did love that show. No doubt about it. I'm going to try something new with you here, Chuck. We used to do this back in the day coming out in theaters this week. You pick a year. I want you to pick a year this week in theaters. And I'm going to ask you, what did you see in theaters? And what would you go to first and foremost in that year? So pick a year back in our heyday, 80s, 90s, even early 2000s that we want to look back. 84?
Let's go to our favorite year, 84.
Our favorite year in 1984, and it would have been September 28th through October 4th. Now, new in theaters, you've got The Wildlife, which was actually written by Cameron Crowe. Do you remember that film with Christopher Penn, Eric Stoltz, and Leah Thompson, a high school comedy? You also had Irreconcilable.
It's weird. I don't remember it.
Irreconcilable Differences with Drew Barrymore suing her parents, right? Splitting from her parents with Shelley Long and Ryan O'Neal, I believe. And then you got a movie called Impulse that came out with I can never remember her name. But it was a sexy drama. Those were your new movies, along with Body Rock and Country came out, which also starred Jessica Lange. But also in theaters this week, you had a choice of All of Me in its second week, The Evil That Men Do in its second week, and then Ghostbusters, Purple Rain, and The Karate Kid were all still running through summer. So I ask you, what did you see in the theaters?
And what would you see first out of those films today?
Well, I saw Ghostbusters, Karate Kid. I'd go see Karate Kid. I would love to see Karate Kid. If I could take a time machine back to 1984 with a big crowd in the theater, I'd definitely pick Karate Kid.
Well, and also still running, by the way, was a re-release of Gremlins was in theaters too. I'd have to agree.
Wow.
The Karate Kid was, I mean, you're right. That magical moment of discovering it for the first time. The number one movie, by the way, was All of Me. Funny movie with Steve Martin and Lily Tomlin.
And I'm
surprised you didn't say The Evil That Men Do. I mean, your boy, yeah. Charles Bronson. I mean, that was a TriStar movie, not a canon film. Mm. And then the whole point of going to the theaters at this time is you're probably going to see what came out new, and just none of the new movies there really you did any cartwheels for. I'm surprised you don't remember that.
No,
the Wildlife. It was kind of like a ripoff or a homage to Fast Times at Ridgemont High that he did as well. I'd probably agree with you. Purple Rain was very popular at the time.
I did not see that in the theater, though. I got to be honest. I did not see that in the theater.
Also in theaters was Amadeus getting its start for the Oscar run that it was going to go on. And Tightrope was in theaters as well. The gritty.
I saw that. And I saw it in a theater. Very, very different type Clint Eastwood movie.
Very much so. Very rated R movie. Much different.
And he took risk in that one. He definitely took risk, no doubt.
He did. No doubt about it, Chuck. And any big birthdays you want to talk about? I know it's Jason Alexander's birthday today. Thoughts on
happy
that?
Happy birthday. No, not really. I mean,
you don't want to talk about his work in Dunstan Checks In?
No.
How about Anthony Mackie? Anthony Mackie's birthday as well. Okay. Nothing? You got nothing on it, huh?
I mean, respect him. I think he's good. It'd be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see him as Captain America. Will that resonate? Will it make money? Will people care? To a point, they will.
And then Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones, who share a birthday, which is remarkable for me coming up.
I'm a huge fan of Michael Douglas falling down, Fatal Attraction, China Syndrome, great career, very interesting, highly intelligent interview. I'm a big fan.
Well, let's talk about some fall movie preview here, Chuck, and we'll get started with next week and heading into October. A movie that I actually think looks really good from the director of Rogue One, The Creator, which stars Denzel's kid about befriending android robot, an AI. I think this could connect, Chuck, and it looks like a good sci-fi action film.
Yeah, I saw behind the scenes a featurette on the pre-show at a theater. It certainly looks interesting. Allison Janney also has a big part.
She's the villain.
In the film. So yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. I don't know what it's tracking at. We'll see. Hopefully it gets out of the gate.
All due respect to him, but it's not a lot of star power and a high concept. So I'd like to see this movie do well. You also have Paw Patrol, The Kill Room, which is a heist movie with Uma Thurman and Samuel Jackson reteaming from way back when. And Saw 10, Chuck, comes out next weekend, not closer to Halloween.
It looks really nasty. For a Saw movie, these trailers are nasty.
And Tobin Bell returns. He died seven films ago, didn't he?
I know. It's going to be interesting. Is it a prequel?
I don't know. I try not to watch these movies. I got to be
honest.
You
know, it's interesting. You look at the box office of The Nun 2 and just about all these horror movies, Smile and they all open. It's almost every one of them opens.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming Saw 10 will open.
In streaming, interesting news, 57 Second comes out. Morgan Freeman has dipped into the realm of I'm going straight to streaming films now. He's in that with Joel Hutcherson. You've got Muzzle coming out with Aaron Eckhart, another a movie that scratch your head of what happened. Looks like it's a cop dog movie. And Reptile comes out on Netflix, which stars Benicio Del Toro, that actually with Alicia Silverstone. That is interesting to me for star power alone. You're going to see a lot of horror movies in October. Why not start with the one that started them all, Chuck? We get a reboot of The Exorcist Believer. And of course, Ellen Burstyn returns in this film. We talked about it a little bit a couple weeks ago. Real question for me is, how big can this film be?
This is very interesting to me because I would lie if I told you that. I think the trailers are intriguing. I do. But the thing is, the difference between The Exorcist Believer and rebooting this franchise the way David Gordon Green has been brought on to do, he rebooted the Halloween franchise to very polarizing effect, right?
Yeah.
I would argue in retrospect, he was not the right guy to do that. Okay. As I stated on the show when I did it with you last time, that back in 1973, the original Exorcist in today's dollar would do $1.4 billion domestically. People lined up around city blocks to see that movie. It was one of the greatest movies of all time. To me, still one of the greatest movies of all time. People in this generation, they watch the Halloween movies. The theme music to Halloween gets them in the mood. I just don't know how much interest you could create. I mean, this movie's going to open. I heard it's going to track over 30 million. It's going to open. But the thing is, the studio paid a ton of money for the. I think they paid $300 million to do three movies, which is insane. Like, I think that's way overvalued. They paid too much. If you told me they paid $150 million to make three movies, I say, okay, fair deal. $300 million, not so much. Having said that, bringing back Ellen Burstyn because they want to connect it, obviously, like they're going to do with Halloween, the sequels, they're going to make believe didn't happen. Right, which is stupid because Exorcist 3
is good.
Is a terrific movie. And if you want to see some of the best acting of all time, natural acting, watch the scenes between George C. Scott and Ed Flanders in Exorcist 3 when they just talk dialogue. It's just great, great acting in such a natural way. So here's the thing. I do think this movie will open, but I think for the most part, a lot of people that go see this movie, they're not going to even care about the original Exorcist. They're not going to have any memory of it, of seeing it. Some people will, but the mass majority of people that see Exorcist Believer are just going to be, oh, the trailer looks interesting. I want to see a possession movie. I hope it's good. Two more sequels will be on the way if this one gets out of the gate. But I do think this is a very interesting project to do.
Less interesting, except for the star power in it out next October 6th, is the teaming of John Cena and Alison Brie in a kind of Romancing the Stone type action movie called Freelance from the director of Taken. Now, look, it's not going to make any money. I do like her a lot. Never really amounted to much on the big screen. I did love the TV show.
How would you equate her? How would you? I like her too, but how would you equate her career? Would be what would you say? I don't want to use the word. I want to be a derogatory B-lister.
Yeah, she's not A-talent. Recognizable, but not like you couldn't tell me her name kind of deal, right?
So a lot of people if a studio gets a decent script and they need a female lead, is her name mentioned?
Yeah, not at lead, no. But this, she's in a John Cena movie. We'll see what happens. And also interesting, too, movie that probably would have made a bigger deal 30 years ago, a courtroom drama with Jamie Foxx and Tommy Lee Jones. I mean, I'd go see it. The Burial.
Yeah.
It's going to premiere in theaters and then go to Amazon Prime about a funeral director who needs to hire a kind of Johnny Cochran type lawyer who is played by Jamie Foxx, of course. Again, if this movie came out 30 years ago, we'd be talking Oscar buzz for these two guys. Instead, I bet you there's most of our audience. Well, what the hell movie is this? I didn't even know it existed. And there's two other courtroom dramas coming out October 6th. Caine Mutiny Court Martial, which will be on Paramount Plus and Showtime with Kiefer Sutherland and Jason Clarke, and a movie called Miranda's Victim with the star power of Andy Garcia, Donald Sutherland, and Ryan Felipe. So,
Donald Sutherland, he's really up there still working.
Yeah, he is. It's just interesting. Some big names, movies nobody's really going to take their time to see. You brought up Taylor Swift's Eras Tour. There's really nothing around it that people are. There's an animated movie nobody's going to see, but it's interesting how people just discover, why bother? Nobody's going to go see our movie. Let's just move on. You'll have October 20th Oscar bait time, Chuck, and interesting pick for Martin Scorsese's, his topic, Killers of the Flower Moon. Early buzz from what I hear is some of his best stuff. It seems like they say that every time he releases a movie. Leonardo's back, Robert De Niro's back, two of the main actors he's worked with most of his career. about a murder on a Native American ground, Osage a murder. And I don't
what's
know
how. Name, what's her name? The lead actress. I have a story about her.
Her name is it Lily Gladstone? Is that her name or no? Tantu Cardinale, isn't it? Or I don't know.
Well, the lead in that, the female lead in that movie, evidently, Scorsese was casting.
It's Lily Gladstone. It is Lily Gladstone.
Yeah, he talked to her on a Zoom meeting, and he got a good feel and cast her. He just felt when he spoke to her on a Zoom meeting, without meeting her in person, he just felt this is it. This is what I'm looking for, and he cast her.
Maybe that's the one thing. Interesting film, but maybe the one thing we should be glad of, it's not 4.5 hours and we're seeing it in a theater.
Yeah, true. What is it, like 3 hours?
Probably. Yeah. Probably. Also out that day is Old Dad, starring Bill Burr, Bobby Cannavale, and Bokeem Woodbine. Get your sleeping bag ready for that day too, Chuck.
I got it ready.
Now look, I'm not going to lie to you, but I think this movie is going to make a ton of money coming out Halloween weekend. My daughter is already waiting in line for it. She would wait in line like you're doing right now. But Five Nights at Freddy is going to be a huge movie, Chuck, this Halloween. It's got an unbelievable following. Gamers, it's a scary trailer. Josh Hutcherson's in it as well. I think this movie looks pretty good. And I just know people my daughter's age to 20 years old, Five Nights at Freddy's could be the one Halloween movie that catches some steam. I'm a little surprised they're releasing it so close to Halloween.
Yes, yeah, you figure you give it another week before, right?
Yeah,
it's a good trailer though. I like
it. Is a good trailer. Yeah, it is a good trailer. It's pretty effective. The holdovers comes out too with Paul Giamatti at a esteemed college where he stays during Christmas time. It's got a real good trailer attached to it as well. And you got Pain Hustlers coming out on Netflix only, Chuck. Which unbelievable star power of Emily Blunt and Chris Evans pain medication sellers, pharmaceutical sellers. Yeah, it looks pretty good. But interesting, Netflix only with that. And, you know,
I love how people like, and I like, listen, I like him a lot, but like people like Chris Evans, like you read in interviews how he tries to almost distance himself from the Marvel universe. It's like, it's a little bit much, no, but I understand because, you know, he wants to have a real career outside too, right? Of Captain America, and he's a very appealing guy. He is.
Well,
back in the day,
Christopher Reeve tried to do the same thing, yeah. Right? He started doing
it was hard.
Yeah. Also, I meant to point out too, Paramount Plus. A week prior, I did want to bring up a reboot of Pet Sematary's coming out. With David Duchovny, it's a prequel from it's set in 1969. So they're dipping into the name. That. And Pet Sematary Bloodlines will come out in early October. And then we're heading into speaking of David Duchovny, we're going to hear a name we haven't heard in a while. Meg Ryan's coming back, Chuck, in a movie called What Happens Later. She actually directed this airport romantic comedy.
Okay.
So Meg Ryan back in the swing of things. What do we know of this?
I don't know. I wish her the best. I hope. It gets noticed. Do I think it will? Probably not. But I hope it has at least some marketing roots, so people do understand that it is coming out. But hopefully the strike will be over soon, so these actors can get on the talk show host circuit and start talking about it. That's a project. That is a project. She needs to go on the talk show circuit to promote it and then regain interest in her past glory. And get people maybe interested in seeing this movie.
Also early November, will Priscilla be as popular as Elvis was a few years back?
That's Sofia Coppola movie, correct?
Yes, it's based on Priscilla Presley's life, obviously. Kaylee Spaney. Yeah.
Listen, I think these movies really do need the strike to end to have the directors and the stars go on the talk show circuit to generate any sort of interest. Without that, I think these movies financially we'll all be in trouble.
Coming out on Netflix in early November is a Sly biography called Sly, Sylvester Stallone. I really enjoyed the Arnold Schwarzenegger miniseries on Netflix. Now we're going to get to see, I mean, it's kind of hard because don't we already know The Sylvester Stallone story. I mean, it'd be interesting to see what new we could learn.
But I mean, listen, if he really goes warts and all, I think it'll be interesting. I do find it interesting how the fact that, and again, none of my business, but you know, like 7 months ago, his wife was filing for divorce. They reconciled a month later, and now they're doing a reality show, and all he talks about is his family, which is cool. I mean, it's very cool, but. You know, life has a way of making some very bizarre twists and turns, and you know, the strong survive, and ultimately we all have to navigate through our own existence. So yeah, I mean, I would be interested in watching it for sure.
We'll wrap up here as we head towards Thanksgiving. A couple of movies that fall into the categories what we've been talking about is big name movies, but does anybody care anymore? You'll have the Marvels on November 10th, then you'll have the Hunger Games prequel, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Again, what helps the Hunger Games, it's been a while and it's an all new cast, right? I just don't know if this kind of movie is going to resonate with, and I'm really interested to see what happens with the Marvels, because speaking of Jump the Shark, many believe the Marvel franchise has done that. Can it get resuscitated by the return of Captain Marvel?
Here's one of the issues. Now, the trailer looks very entertaining. But Forbes magazine reported that the budget is $275 million. The problem is they cannot keep a cap on the amount that these movies cost. And Captain Marvel, and I like her. I enjoyed the first one. It's flawed. Yep. It has issues. But I did enjoy it. And I do like her. I find her a very interesting actress to watch on screen. I think she does a good job. But the problem is Captain Marvel is not the Hulk. It's not Captain America. It's not Iron Man, right? So $275 million on a movie that she spearheads is a big risk. It is a big risk.
I would say the original had skeptics screaming, and it made money. And it did really, really well.
Everything was full steam ahead. I think the landscape's changed, though. I think, you know, I also did read that after tax credits, the budget of Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1 went down to like $225 million. So that movie actually is profitable now, right. Dead Reckoning. Right. So this, I mean, they could rest a little bit easier when the second one's released next year. But again, we talk about this ad nauseum. The issue in the industry is the movies cost way too much to make. And that was clearly reflected on the budget of Dial of Destiny versus the original Raiders. It's insane the amount of production costs to produce these type big tentpole movies. It's out of control.
And Chuck, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up, they finally, you know, they made the Halloween movies. They made Valentine's Day. They made all these holiday movies that are horror movies. They finally made a Thanksgiving horror movie from Eli Roth coming out the week before Thanksgiving. It actually has Patrick Dempsey.
Well, that mock trailer was in the Quentin Tarantino Grindhouse movie, right?
Correct. Way back when. Yes.
So this is many years after the fact. Listen, I think Eli Roth is a really interesting talent. Doesn't work as much as he should. But if you look at Hostel, okay, now that movie's not for all taste.
No.
But he shot that for $4 million. If you could stomach that movie is super compelling. You'll be on the edge of your seat. It's very well directed, well mounted, looks fantastic for $4 million. It's well acted. The guy can make a movie.
And I would say the same thing about Cabin Fever, which I like better.
That movie tremendously.
It's the same thing.
I'm a big fan of Cabin Fever.
Low big budget, scary. Movie. Yep.
Yes.
I think part of it is he believed his own hype and he got a little bit too big for his britches, but I don't know.
He directed the Death Wish remake, right? He directed the Death Wish remake with Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
He can also mount a movie. There's no doubt about it.
There's no doubt about it. And that's an interesting concept. Also, Thanksgiving, you'll have Disney's Wish and a movie getting a lot of buzz. Bradley Cooper's Maestro based on the life of Leonard Bernstein, and a lot of Oscar buzz on that too. Some controversy around it as well, but good to see Bradley Cooper.
The Brastatic Nose. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you got, you know, Stars Born was so successful. I'd like to see him have the same type of success. Him and Carey Mulligan. So we'll see what happens.
I'm rooting for him.
So is there something that you're literally excited about to see in theaters this fall?
I mean, I'll see some of this stuff. I can't use the word I'll do a hula hoop over. But I mean, some of it does have appeal. All I want is a stream of movies. I think they need to get back into better scripting, trust audiences' attention span. I think you have to do that to get the industry back online. And I just want to see theaters prosper, because at the end of the day, I do believe going to a movie theater is part of the culture of this country. I think it's still a cheap enough date. I think it's something very solid to do on a Friday, Saturday, and a Sunday. And to have a conversation about a cultural event, I think it's a really cool thing. So it's all good in my mind.
All right, Chuck, always a pleasure to be with you for a little bit on a weekend. Have a great one, all right?
To the audience, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Movie Moments with Chuck Curry and Mike Rags. Download and listen to an archived show, or be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to podcasts to hear our new episode.
Podcasts by Federated Media.